good afternoon. This is Harry Brown. I'm glad you're with me for an hour of Money Talk, for talking about your savings, talking about your investments, talking about the economy, talking about anything having to do with your money and how you may be able to protect it better and watch it grow without fearing that something's going to get in the way of it. Well, today I thought we might begin by talking about superstitions. It's funny, people don't realize, I don't think people realize, how pervasive superstitions are in the investment world. Let me tell you a little story. Or let's put it this way. Suppose you could take a walk with whomever the investment advisor is that you most respect. You can take a little walk with him and get an opportunity to see how a great mind works. And as you're walking down the street, he looks up at the sky and he says, the clouds are in a straight line across the horizon. That's a bullish sign for the stock market. A little further along, you come to a ladder propped against the wall. He steers you around it, explaining, I don't want to walk under a ladder. The week ahead is going to be critical for our stocks. You chuckle politely at his little joke, perhaps, but when he glares at you, you realize he's serious. The next week may be the crossroads, he says sternly. He says that's going to determine whether stocks continue up or slip into a bear market. I don't want to take any chances, he says. And, of course, you say to him, you don't really believe that the pattern of the clouds or walking around a ladder has anything to do with the market's performance, do you? And he says, yes, I do. And you say, how can you? What do the clouds have to do with stocks? How can walking under a ladder influence the investment markets? And he says, I don't know how these things work, but I can tell you this. I've been in the investment business for 20 years, and I know that they do. Now, how are you going to answer such an assertion? You can't investigate every encounter the advisor has had over the past 20 years, every cloud formation he's seen, every time he's approached a ladder. But you don't really feel that you need to. You simply assume that any connections that he's seen between one thing and another are just coincidence, since there's no conceivable way that clouds and ladders could have anything to do with stocks and other markets. So rather than argue with him, I would think that you'd probably just resolve to spend the next week looking for another investment advisor. Well, you find a replacement by going to see a trader that a friend just swears by. He's got an excellent track record, and when you meet him, you're encouraged by the studious manner that he has. Now, here's a guy who uses his intellect, and during the conversation with him, you ask him what his outlook for gold is. He says, gold looks good. The next uptrend should last 13 months and bring an increase of $144 an ounce. Wow! You're really impressed by the precision of his forecast. He must be one of these market geniuses you've heard so much about. Here's a chance to find out how he does it. So you ask him, why are you so sure that gold is going to go up $144 over the next 13 months? And he says, in the last uptrend, gold gained $89. And that's 1.6 times $89 is $144. The number 1.6 is the golden ratio, you know. Now, as to the timing, the last two uptrends lasted 5 and 8 months, respectively. Whenever 8 follows 5, 13 comes next. So the $144 rally should take about 13 months. Well, what's your reaction to that? I guess it's you wonder whether the cloud watcher would be willing to take your account back. Now, I realize that this story I've just told is fictional and it's even fanciful. But the funny thing is that the elements of the story are much more commonplace than you might think. I haven't actually encountered investment advisors who suffer from cloudophilia or ladder phobia, but the investment world is full of superstitions, and one of the most popular varieties is numerology, the belief that certain numbers or patterns of numbers have special significance. For example, let me tell you about an incident. There's an advisor who back in the 80s was continually being quoted by the wire news services and newspapers and on television financial shows. And in 1986, he wrote an article in his newsletter, which I would receive at the time, in which he said, quote, "We forecast a new all-time high for gold in this cycle, much higher than the 1980 high of $850. Now, if gold interests you, that opening is certainly going to get your attention, and you'd want to know how he arrived at his opinion. And fortunately, he explained how he arrived at his opinion. Quote, "In the early 1970s, gold rose from $35 to $180. This was a factor of 5. 35 times 5 equals 175, and 5 is a Fibonacci number. From 1976 to 1980, gold advanced from $103 to $850, a Fibonacci factor of 8. 103 times 8 equals 824. The price low of the 1980-1985 bear market in gold was $285. The next number in the Fibonacci sequence after 5 and 8 is 13. If the current bull market in gold continues its Fibonacci relationship, then it should peak at $3,705, which is 285 times 13. Now, I don't know if you followed all of that, but please understand that this example is not hypothetical, it's not fanciful, it's not even unusual. The superstitions that pervade the investment market probably affect 75% or more of all investment advisors, people who write about investments, traders who carry accounts for investors, and so on. And there's probably a better than even chance that your favorite investment advisor is guided by some of these superstitions. And if you wonder why the best laid investment plans often seem to go wrong, part of the answer may be that the plans are founded on superstitions, even though you don't know that superstition has entered into the forecast that you're relying on. Now, when we come back from the first break, what I'd like to do is to look at how we arrive at information and how much superstition is part of that, and I'll explain that Fibonacci sequence that the investment advisor relied on, because that's very, very common in the investment business, perhaps much more common than you realize. So stay tuned, and we'll talk a little bit more about these superstitions and numerology and how they affect investment advisors. And if you have questions on the subject, you can call me at 1-800-259-9231. This is Harry Brown. Harry Brown here, and you're listening to Money Talk on the Genesis Network. And we were talking about superstitions, and before we left for the break, I said that when we come back, we'll talk about how we get the ideas that we might act on. Now, there are, I think, four basic ways that we rely on information. The first is what we might call the verifiable In other words, things that you can actually verify for yourself. For instance, you might not understand all the ins and outs of the law of gravity, but you can verify it any time just by dropping something and watching it fall to the ground. So you can verify for yourself the law of gravity. So that's one way that you can get ideas that you rely on. The second is that something is reasonable. Maybe you haven't actually tested the idea that you would drown if you stay under water too long, but it's consistent with what you know about water, life, and breathing. And you can't imagine a way for the idea not to be true, and so it's reasonable to think that if you stay underwater too long, you'll drown. That's the second way that you may rely upon some idea. The third is the authoritative. You've never checked personally to be sure that Africa is located where the Atlas says it is, but you trust Rand McNally's version of the world, because you believe they've verified the matter using standards you would consider reasonable, and because you've never found them saying anything you know to be wrong. So you trust a particular authority. That's the authoritative. And the fourth way that you rely on some particular thing is through superstition. Now, a superstition is a belief that hasn't been verified and perhaps can't be verified, and it's one for which no one can provide a reasonable explanation. And in fact, you can't even imagine what a reasonable explanation might be, and for which no authoritative source has claimed that there is a reasonable explanation. It's just too complicated for you to understand. Now, for example, you don't accept the idea that breaking a mirror brings 7 years bad luck, because nothing that you know about life suggests any connection between mirrors and misfortune. In addition, there's no body of authoritative opinion that accepts this idea, and it's doubtful that you'd spend 7 years trying to verify it. Well, let's assume that you and I are not superstitious, so no one's going to convince us to worry about a broken mirror or to act on the premise that things always happen in threes, or to pay attention to ladders or to black cats or anything of that sort. But it is very easy for us to be fooled into accepting more sophisticated superstitions by someone who leads us to believe that a particular investment rule has been verified, or when somebody explains it in a way that seems reasonable, or when it's cloaked in a mantle of authority. Economics and investing depend very little on principles that are verifiable, ideas that can be proven once and for all. And this is because the social sciences are about people, not about electrons and neutrons and other things that are always the same from one day to the next and from one electron to another and so on. People are different from each other, and people act differently today than they did yesterday. And as a result, there is no way you can have laboratory tests that will establish and verify principles of economics or investing. So most of the economic principles you act on are accepted because they seem reasonable to you, or because they seem to have been checked out or thought through by somebody you consider to be reasonable. And again, because economics deals with the decisions and actions of human beings, an idea is reasonable only if it's consistent with what we know about the way human beings act. What electrons or planets do isn't really relevant. Economic event A can be expected to lead to economic event B only if you can imagine how the actions of human beings create some kind of continuous thread that causes A to lead to B. Now, because the principles of economics and investing can't be proven once and for all, there's a lot of room for pseudoscience and superstition in the investment world. People who reject ideas about full moons and black cats readily accept superstitions pertaining to investments, especially pertaining to speculations. Now, I can think of three principal ways that investors are induced to accept superstitions that really don't have any reasonable explanations. The first way is with evidence that is incomplete. You're shown a graph that, or you're explained to that event B has followed event A four times in a row. Wow, that can't be coincidence, four times in a row. But you aren't shown the seven times that event A wasn't followed by event B. Or you aren't shown the nine times that event B occurred without event A preceding it. Or it isn't pointed out that events A and B are just two of a larger group of events that seem to follow whenever event Q occurs. In other words, you are sold this idea with incomplete evidence, taking things out of context, in other words. The second way you can be fooled is that the idea comes from a source you consider to be authoritative. You may respect the person who's promoting the idea because he seems to have an outstanding track record, or because he once made a remarkable forecast that did come to pass, or because his economic or political philosophy seems to be similar to yours. Or you may simply be bowled over by his credentials. He's an economist, or he's a scientist, or he's a famous person, or even just that he has a very confident manner. And that confident manner is enough to convince you that he must know what he's talking about. Or maybe he just talks in such gibberish that you figure he's on a higher plane than you are, and thus he must know a lot of things that you don't know, and you ought to listen to him. A lot of people get by in this world just by talking gibberish. Maybe someday I'll have a broadcast in which I present a lot of gibberish ideas as authoritative opinions, and we'll see whether or not you accept them. Well, we're about to take a break, so I'll give you the third way that you can be sold a lot of garbage when we come back from this break. This is Harry Brown. If you have any questions or want to make any comments about this or anything else, just give me a call, 1-800-259-9231. Welcome back. This is Harry Brown, and we're talking today about superstitions in the investment world. And before we went to the break, I said there are three ways that you can be sold a bill of goods, sold a trading system or indicator or something else that's really just based on superstition. The first is that you're shown incomplete evidence. Somebody tells you or shows you that one event was followed by another four times in a row, but he doesn't show you all the times that it didn't happen. The second is that you get this idea from a source you consider to be authoritative, somebody who supposedly has a great track record or once made a great prediction that actually came true. Now, the third possibility is that the idea comes wrapped up in some kind of an authoritative package. In other words, it's claimed by the guy promoting this that the idea has been tested over and over and over again, and it's been verified beyond question. Or maybe the promoter of the idea dazzles you with mathematical and statistical techniques, things that are useful in the physical sciences but really have no place in economics whatsoever. Now, in other areas of life, one or more of these components probably wouldn't be enough to get you to overcome your natural reserve and skepticism. Somebody who said, well, I checked the ladder theory 5 times in a row, and it always works that if you walk under the ladder, something bad happens. And 5 times in a row, walking outside the ladder, nothing bad happened. You would say, so what? And you would not take up ladder phobia or anything of the sort. But somehow, when the subject is investing and speculating, it just seems that it is so easy to accept ideas, I think because investors want so much to believe that they're true, that there really is some system for predicting the future, that there really is some trading way by which I can always be sure that I can speculate and win. Now, investing is not hard work. A few weeks ago, I talked about setting up a balanced, diversified portfolio that will bring you the return that's available to everyone in the market, and you can do it without having to predict the future and without having to monitor the investments or change them. That's investing. And it isn't difficult at all for the average person. But speculating is something else. Speculating is trying to beat the return that's available to everyone else, and that's not easy. And it draws more on judgment than on science. There is no skill, no technique that can be relied upon that's going to work unfailingly, that will always be there. There are no rules that provide consistent knowledge of the way a market is going to move. And I don't care what anyone says, there simply are no such rules. And in order to find something to count on, many investors are willing to set aside the skepticism that they would apply in any other area of their lives. And they will give the idea that's presented to them the benefit of every doubt. They will ignore inconsistencies. They will ignore the exceptions. They will ignore the logical flaws that would scream at them if the subject were anything other than investing. And so superstitions are accepted eagerly, and they're repeated endlessly, and they give birth to new superstitions, and they become a large part of the common knowledge of the investing world. The practice of technical analysis, for instance, is overflowing with superstition. We'll perhaps go into that some week on this show, but let me give you one example. Some technical analysts, in fact, most of them, believe that an investment price that's plotted on a graph that forms a pattern that's similar to a drooping flag. In other words, the thing drops and comes back up a little, and it creates a picture of a drooping flag on a graph. They believe that that is the prelude to a rally, even though there's no reasonable explanation for the belief. And no rigorous attempt that I know of has ever been made to test the idea and verify that it's true. But superstition isn't confined to technical analysis. In fact, it pervades the entire investment world. Investors and advisors rely on trading systems, on supposedly fixed economic relationships, and on legends on how investment prices move, all without demanding an explanation of why they should be true, and usually without any serious attempt to determine whether history has already refuted these ideas. The common explanation that you get is, I don't know why it works this way, but it always does. But that really isn't an explanation. Even a witch doctor who forecasts the future by throwing chicken bones on the ground, even such a person as he could argue, I don't know why it works, but it always has. Every cult of magic, no matter how outlandish, has adherents who swear that it always works, even though they can't explain it. In most cases, the technique actually doesn't always work. In fact, it works only infrequently. However, when someone joins a cult, although he may not learn how to see the future, he does learn how to explain away the lapses between theory and practice. In other words, how to explain away whenever the idea fails. Even if you see that an idea has worked on one or more occasions, the lack of a reasonable explanation makes the idea unreliable. Someone watching somebody flip a coin heads four times in a row might say, my God, this guy knows how to flip heads. I can rely on him always to flip heads. I don't know how he does it, but he does it. But that's not enough. Any cause and effect relationship must be explained in terms of what we know about how human beings act. And so you should remain unconvinced until someone can explain how the actions of one person lead to the actions of another, to another, and another, until you arrive at the effect that supposedly flows from the original cause. And without such an explanation, the odds are very great the evidence for the relationship is contrived or it's just the result of coincidence. Now, let's talk about numerology. The most famous and pervasive form of numerology in the investment world is what is called Fibonacci numbers. Fibonacci numbers, they're a series of numbers that have special significance, almost mystical significance. No one can explain how, no one can explain why, but there are many, many, many investment advisors who believe these do have special significance. And I'll tell you a little about that series when we come back. This is Harry Brown. You also can email me, question@harrybrown.org. It's question@harrybrown.org, and Brown has an E on the end. Well, welcome back. Harry Brown here, and we're talking about superstitions in the investment world today, and now we're ready to talk about the famous Fibonacci numbers. And they really are honored by many, many advisors in the investment world, even if they don't mention them to you. Leonardo Fibonacci was an Italian mathematician who lived from 1170 to 1230. Many, many centuries ago, and he devised a numerical sequence that begins with the numbers 1 and 1, which are what you call the seeds of the sequence. And these are added together to make 2, which then becomes the next number. Then you add 1 and 2 together to make 3, which then becomes the next number. Then you add 2 and 3 together to make 5, 3 and 5 to make 8, and so on and on. In other words, each number in the sequence is added to the number before it to get the next number in the sequence. So you have 1 and 2 make 3, 2 and 3 make 5, 3 and 5 make 8, 5 and 8 make 13, 8 and 13 make 21, and so on. And so the sequence becomes, or the series becomes, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, 21, 34, 55, 89, 144, and on and on and on. Again, with each number after the beginning equal to the sum of the two numbers immediately preceding it. Now, modern witch doctors in the investment world believe that Fibonacci numbers have a special status in nature and in the financial world. And they expect these numbers to show up at strategic places in an investment's future. In the example I gave at the beginning of the broadcast, the advisor saw, or thought he saw, the numbers 5 and 8 and concluded that 13 must be coming next because it's the next one in the Fibonacci sequence. Now, Fibonacci buffs offer no cause and effect relationship, at least none that I've ever seen. They offer no reasonable explanation of why these numbers should be significant. Instead, they verify its significance by collecting examples of Fibonacci numbers in the investment world, such as, hey, there's an uptrend that lasted 8 months, and 8 is a Fibonacci number. Of course, it would be amazing if there weren't plenty of examples, since between the numbers 1 and 10, half of them are Fibonacci numbers. So Fibonacci numbers are bound to show up frequently. The people who believe this stuff are also awed by the fact that the result of dividing any Fibonacci number by its predecessor, after the first few in the series, divide any number by its predecessor and you get 1.618. In other words, 55 divided by 34 equals 1.618. 144 divided by 89 equals 1.618. And so on. If there were nothing special about Fibonacci numbers, why is there this consistent relationship between every pair of numbers? The number 1.618 is called the golden ratio or the golden mean. Now, it's reciprocal, meaning 1 divided by this number equals 6.18. Divide 1.618 into 1, and you get the number 0.618. So now you got 1.618 and 0.618, and they both have special significance in the Fibonacci scheme of things. In other words, an uptrend in a price might be expected to stop at 1.618 of the price of where it started. Or a downtrend might be expected to halt at 0.618 times the price at which it started. Oh, some writers have composed rhapsodies about the frequency with which the golden mean shows up in life. A rectangle whose length is 1.618 times its width is said to be the proportion most pleasing to the eye. And so that shape is found in paintings, playing cards, windows, doors, books, anything, many other things. But the funny thing is, if you go around with a tape measure, you find that they don't show up that often. Windows and playing cards and so on aren't really 1.618 width times the length or whatever. But no matter. Fibonacci fans say that mathematics can be used to project the past or the present into the future, if only you know the right multiplier or have the correct sequence of numbers. And it's true that there is something fascinating about the symmetry of the Fibonacci series and the tidy way in which each number is about 1.618 times the size of its predecessor. Once it's been called to your attention, it's easy to start seeing Fibonacci numbers under every bed. Somehow the world seems full of numbers like 3, 5, 8, 1.618, and 0.618. Life itself seems to testify to the significance of Fibonacci numbers. And what could be more authoritative than mathematics? But I think it's best that you hold off before you enter limit orders to sell all your investments at 1.618 times their recent lows. What we've seen of Fibonacci numbers so far in this discussion may be true, but it's all incomplete. The attributes of the series may be interesting, but they are far from unique. Mathematics is full of curious consistencies, and I'll mention just a couple of them when we come back. This is Harry Brown. Stay tuned. We've got more to come. Hi there, Harry Brown. Thanks for listening today. This is the final segment, so let me wrap this up in a hurry. The Fibonacci series is very interesting, but you could create another series instead of just adding the previous two numbers together, add the previous three numbers together and make a series, and you'll find that each one has a consistent ratio of each number being so much times the previous number. You also, as an exercise, could sit down and make a series 1 times 1 is 1, 2 times 2 is 4, 3 times 3 is 9, 4 times 4 is 16, and just do that for about 10 or 11 numbers, and then notice the difference between each of the results, the squares of each of the numbers, and you'll find a very fascinating series there. Now, the important point in all of this is that investment markets are not moved by ratios, divisors, numerical series, cubes, or lines drawn on a graph, nor are they moved by chicken bones. They're moved by human beings who are buying and selling in accordance with their own private hopes, their concerns, beliefs, aspirations, and these are values that change constantly and allow no measurement whatsoever. There is no way to know what people are thinking and how their thoughts have changed since yesterday. And there is no way to verify absolutely the worth of any trading system, indicator, or investment rule, although it is possible to verify the falsity of it. You can verify that something is not a rule just by the fact that there are exceptions in history to what is supposed to be the rule. And no matter how commonly accepted, no system or rule should be considered to be authoritative. So it's imperative that you apply the test of reason to any trading system, any method of investment analysis, any kind of rule at all that you might consider. There must be an explanation that shows how the rule evolves from the serious actions of human beings pursuing their own goals. And statements like, it works, or history repeats itself, or the markets are moved by fear and greed, or human nature never changes. These are not explanations. They're just slogans, like vote for Bush or vote for Kerry. And no track record is a reliable guide to the validity of a system because, again, it is incomplete knowledge. It is taken out of sequence. There are lucky streaks always in trading systems and investment advisors. And if you pull those lucky streaks out of context, they can appear to be some kind of natural law, but they're not. Even the ideas that do make sense aren't necessarily unyielding laws of nature. That's why you need to have the investment, the money that is precious to you, invested in a balanced and diversified portfolio and speculate only with money you can afford to lose. This is Harry Brown. I'm so glad you tuned in today. Please tune in again next Sunday. So I'm saying come back. Come back, sweet papa, and let's do this again next week. Goodbye. Have a good week.